Joroya Oh, yeah. 那公路街啊什么的，行了，天桥，哎，中间那个你，你不清楚怎么回事？人家小区生活的呀，都过上去了。他的老人呢，他甚至他们有的人做生意，我们提起的，可是啊，人家确实人家别的小区生，人家就把生意给自己生活当中弄死。
Okay, students, you already know you have a class in the next room. We need to cultivate altruistic motivation to participate in this teaching. We call it bodhicitta motivation. And so if possible, we need to reflect upon how fortunate we are indeed to find this kind of fully endowed precious human life characterized by freedoms and enriching factors. And this kind of life is very rare and very meaningful, yet we can lose it very easily. It is very transient or impermanent. So we have to reflect on all those things and all the connecting links, to the practices of advanced level practitioners, and then cultivate the altruism, seeking complete enlightenment for the sake of all other sentient beings. With that kind of a mindset or motivation, we should listen to the teaching, we should participate in the teaching.
你是什么时候毕业的呢？这个对吧？什么毕业的了？
So last Sunday, we finished talking about the 37th secondary transgression or the secondary moral downfall of Bodhisattva practice vows.
我在这里的什么讲？你这种随心没有把修不随心没得呢？怕没把来，不把没得呗。你是看见这里，可是你这种干脆就没把这些在这边的，你不把这边别弄啊，也是这把考虑没有行动的，天天随心了，是个了不？天天修不了，哎，你这个控制到联络天天给按个这个苦逼个。
The 38th secondary transgression of Bodhisattva vows is that when Bodhisattvas see individuals who are very careless about their thought and actions, they didn't seem to care about what they've been thinking, all the negative thoughts, they didn't seem to care about engaging in negativities. At such times, Bodhisattvas have to be, in a sense, a role model, behave properly in order to inspire these individuals. But if the Bodhisattvas were to lack in their moral behaviors, right, and they themselves become kind of careless in a sense, right, then that would be a secondary transgression here. So Bodhisattvas have to, sometimes inspire people based upon their actions. They have the role model so that other people get inspired by their behaviors. Of course, you remember that, for Bodhisattvas, as we said, out of laziness, out of anger or hostility, out of kind of indifferent attitude, then if they indulge in such actions, then that would be a secondary transgression. And the next secondary transgression, 39, is when others have been, kind to them, but out of laziness, or out of some attitude problem, if Bodhisattvas were not to do, to repair their kindness or the good actions that have been performed in relation to them, then that would be another transgression, secondary transgression, not repaying the kindness of others out of laziness, out of some attitude problem.
在什么就不开始休息吧，对吧？你都龙舟的这位，娘也是什么流浪也是，娘也是我们是那闲居，娘也是我们是女士，对吧？可是，他说是怕嘛，比较着急吧，知道不？哎，你龙舟就过着生活，知道不？龙舟没说，可是看到一天那个不，哎，你刚也晓得一天的事了哇？你知道，说是不给马哥一进给那什么就不闲着，要么那个，他是马进来了些呢。
Secondary transgression for Bodhisattvas would be when they see others in distress, maybe because of some tragedy in the family or something, they lost someone, loved ones. or maybe because of the economic downturn in this particular case, like the poverty stricken, you know, so they are miserable and distressed. At such times, bodhisattvas are expected to make efforts, you know, to lift their spirit up, you know. And if they don't do that, if bodhisattvas remain indifferent to them out of laziness, out of, you know, some attitude problem, then that would be a secondary downfall.
No. Nor de vela jimbar mishi bini ji sirwa dar sey de kom de longe na ta so de pije karsa so de mega de wish bu ma chan ma de ma ya na so de pi ni de de ne lang ya sey de ka ji le lang ko ma de 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 na phang me de wish de we na in de tel sig sa nor de vela jimbar mishi bini ji
The next secondary transgression for both sattvas would be, this should be the 41. Then when others, so to speak, knock on the door because, you know, they have some needs and basic necessities of life on the people who have needs, and if bodhisattvas, out of laziness, you know, out of disliking, if they don't make effort at least to, you know, fulfill their needs, that would be a secondary, you know, transgression. Say bodhisattvas is kind of a, you know, kind of lazy to, you know, get up. He's just kind of comfortable sitting down, right? So I don't want to get up, you know, whoever's knocking on my door, well, that would be a problem, you know. Or that, you know, I don't like that person, so, okay. So, and so then don't respond to the need of that person. That would be a secondary downfall.
Yeah. Kimda Teba Jenla, so you see, she do Mizuna, Cornum JC, Tommy JB, Yishis, or did it was that so the court moment of winter, Piggy, that so you rang up, Gaga Sim Yamba Joshu Marva, or did it Piggy, so Gamikishani, Casa, any Tomasia, this or that, Casa, Danga Mizim Bam, Yamano, Yam Kosopi, that Dugo, she go and it so go in the court, Piggy.
The next secondary downfall, the 42nd in the on the list, is you know, when bodhisattvas here it says the followers, maybe they have a circle of followers, you know, who follow them. And if they are in need of instruction or teaching, dhamma, if bodhisattvas don't provide them the instruction, that would be a secondary transgression. Or that, you know, bodhisattvas, I mean, see that in, among the circle of followers, you know, if some of them have a material needs and bodhisattvas can easily provide some help, okay? In the sense that maybe the bodhisattva doesn't have anything, but the bodhisattva knows that I can just talk to this generous, you know, rich, you know, billionaire guy or girl over there, so I can do something. So if you don't have help that manner, that would be secondary transgression. You know, remember in the practice of what we call it, four points of gathering and measuring the minds of the sentient beings. So this includes, like, you know, having a pleasant speech, you know, nicely, and even giving material gifts. Yeah. So if a bodhisattva is in a position to provide material help to, you know, to those in the circle of followers, and if, you know, he or she doesn't do that, then that would be a secondary transgression. As Geshe-la said, you know, bodhisattva doesn't have to go out of his or her ways, like, through all the pains and troubles to find the help. Okay? But it's easy as, like, you know, okay, I can talk to that person, you know, who has tons of money, you know, can help here. So need to do that, you know, use that. What do you call this? This social networking. See, you know. Okay. Yeah.
That's there. What Shivji has done there. What?
No.
Not some say long. He is same the time by music. He is lot the time by music by Jesus. That day, he is because same the time by Ganga the yoga. I am already that. You do know what? Because John may have sort of thing. Yeah. Because he doing the yoga is your wala.
No.
Oh, did you go sell? Yeah. In the machine and in the because he the time same the time by music by Jesus. What is?
No. The next secondary transgression for bodhisattvas would be 43rd on the list. In certain situations and under certain circumstances, bodhisattvas need to confirm to what are called the normative expectations of the others, especially if those normative expectations are suitable and appropriate. Okay? And if bodhisattvas do not conform to those normative expectations, they kind of become a deviance, well, we got a problem. So that would be a secondary, transgression. Next, secondary transgressions for bodhisattvas would be 44th on the list. If a bodhisattva is in a situation where it is his or her responsibility to express appreciation for the goodness others have done, as we say, give the credit where it is due, right, to praise that person. If for some reason bodhisattva says, I'm not going to do that. I don't like this person. You know, whatever he or she did, marvelous thing. I don't like the person. So I'm not going to express appreciation. I'm not going to sing praises of this person, So out of laziness, out of, disliking, out of attitude problem, if a bodhisattva does not express appreciation for the good work that others have done, then that would be a secondary transgression. Next secondary transgression for bodhisattvas would be if a bodhisattva is in a position he or she sees it fit to, the way it is worded here is, punish the wrongdoer in this particular case, then according to the rules and the regulations of the, society, bodhisattva has to carry out those punishments, But if a bodhisattva doesn't do that, that would be a secondary transgression. And the example Geshe-la has given here is in the case of in the monasteries, how the monks have to follow the Vinaya ethics of the courts of law. Okay, so in certain serious situations, maybe the monk who is responsible has to even ask a monk to, please leave the monastery. You don't belong here, and because of what you have done. And if that monk who is in charge has no guts to do that, right? Say, let it be. Got a problem. Okay, so that monk discipline has to tell a person, you did this thing wrong, and therefore you cannot be part of this community, so you have to leave. Please leave. So in the same way, if a bodhisattva is in a position where, they are expected to carry out whatever the punishment is, sometimes, what we say, bodhisattvas follow all a variety of skillful means. Where they can be very peaceful and they can talk, make sense and talk nicely, they do that, If where some people don't understand the language of the peace, bodhisattvas have to be more forceful, or what we call wrathful. Okay? So bodhisattvas may have to use the wrathful means to deal with people who don't understand the language of peace, so therefore bodhisattvas have to do that. If they don't do that, that would be a secondary transgression. Okay? So my footnote is bodhisattvas can't just simply smile and say it's okay. Got to carry out by force or whatever the wrathful means. Yeah.
Last 타웨 쳔바 봉어소 미릭바 카르사 릭발라 짜바 듀바 도바 민데팔라 타웨 쳔바 봉어소 미신나 준주기 득바 라서바 미지 니시스 다 소소 비게 준주신에 베 쫄음고네 칸데탕 거지 기타 칸데 땡아 유베셰 다 파루보데 비게 카르사 누룽디 상시 구이 슈주세 총 슈주세 슈주 땡아 비게 파루보 주
For the sixth secondary translation for bodhisattvas would be, now this is based on the assumption that bodhisattvas have certain miraculous powers or some supernatural powers. Okay? So when they see there's a need for them to use the miraculous power or supernatural power to be able to change the wrong behaviors of others. Like how some people are very hard to be tamed through peaceful means, they're kind of hardened, you'd call souls here. Yeah, maybe they need to be threatened a little bit. Okay? But bodhisattvas know for sure by using their miraculous power, they can inspire them and bring them on the right track. Then bodhisattvas have to use the power to threaten, to do whatever miracles they have to do, to change the attitude of these people and bring them into on the right right track. So if bodhisattvas don't do that, don't use their powers to change the behavior of those wrongdoers, then that would be a secondary transgression. So those are the 46 secondary transgressions or the secondary moral downfalls of bodhisattva vows. Yeah, and so normally we talk about 18 root transgressions or the fundamental moral downfalls of bodhisattva vows and 46 the secondary transgressions. Yeah, but that doesn't mean that all the secondary transgressions are included on the list. Okay, so those are kind of standard things we usually talk about. But there are things which are not on the list. For example, some of the examples given in the text Geshe-la was referring to if bodhisattvas were to, out of attachment and anger, indulge in the actions of, protecting your friends and, sort of circle of friends, and go against those who are what you see as enemies, right? Just the kind of thing we ordinary people do, right? Protect the families and friends and kill the others. Well, he didn't say kill, but you get a sense. So that would be that would be also a secondary transgression for bodhisattvas. Or that when bodhisattvas are using the basic necessities of life, food, clothing, shelter, because they have to survive, right? But they have to do that with the altruistic motivation or bodhicitta motivation. Because the whole state of being a bodhisattva is they're completely dedicated for the well-being of others. So whatever they do, they have to do with bodhicitta motivation, right? When they eat, eat with bodhicitta. When you wear the cloth, do it with bodhicitta, everything. But if you don't do that with the bodhicitta mind, then that would be a secondary transgression as well. Okay. And and then also, let's say, bodhisattvas do not engage in what we call listening to teaching, contemplating the meaning of the teaching, and meditating on the ascertained meaning of the teaching, out of laziness and things like that, for the benefit of others, that would be a secondary transgression. So there are more, secondary transgressions which are not on those list.
Yes.
我的大家能去提起啊，对了，长寿生善待了长寿生命，把对了呀，去现在就做啊，可是啊，长寿生一培养养的，全部些，哎，你年龄是三十岁，长寿生什么什么些，哎，你他是啥？身边别个可是啊，他有眼不别，就可是么是性格，天天见了天呢，哎，你别个身边的同辈些上面的龙眼国瓜些，我的这年个也是大个些，长寿生命的上，身边些把忙不，眼把忙不同的上，但是没同的都上些是嘛的上下钱的，长寿生命动过了是吧？现在这个年不了呀，哎，你龙眼国瓜些，天天从啥地方学？才对了，长寿生命不，没是没你们的，老些稀的些。嗯。
There are what we call four advice given to preserve or protect one's aspiring bodhicitta or the aspiring mind of enlightenment, in Tibetan called Mönsem. And so number one advice is that bodhisattvas have to reflect upon the benefits of bodhicitta. Yeah, so we need to do that. We need to reflect upon the benefits or the advantages of cultivating bodhicitta, one. Number two, that we cultivate bodhicitta 3 times a day, and as we say, 3 times at night. So that's like generating bodhicitta 6 times during a whole day, 24-hour period day we're talking about. Third advice is that bodhisattvas have to really protect their mind, especially from the difficult people. In the sense, if bodhisattvas are kind of relax their sort of mind, and then they might encounter a difficult person, and then if bodhisattvas think, I cannot work for sentient beings, this is hard enough, and then bodhisattvas will lose their bodhicitta. So bodhisattva has to protect their mind from developing such thought, right? I cannot do, even for one person, if you say that, your whole bodhicitta is gone, because there's nobody to be excluded, And the fourth advice is that bodhisattvas need to engage in the purification of negativities practice and accumulation of merit and wisdom. Yeah. So those are called the four advice concerning what called the development and protection of aspiring bodhicitta.
他第三点，穆斯林，他叫我现在明年不得了，哎，那不学习不完当，搞不学习娘子两把塞多，这地那不学习的太多，他他妈老想这个劲，学习娘子两个呗，第一次呢，农村当不拉嘛的，学那老少。
So those four advices help bodhisattvas to preserve their bodhicitta in this lifetime. Okay. Now, there are certain practices which are recommended in order to preserve bodhicitta in future lives. So that's where we talk about, abandoning what we call types of negativities, okay? Or negative we call
negative actions, nature, and cultivating four types of positive actions. So let's go with the list of the negativities here. Number one is if a bodhisattva intentionally lie to one's gurus and the people who really one trusts, like one's kind parents, right? So lying and cheating one's gurus and kind parents intentionally, knowingly, okay? So that would be the first out of the four negativities. It's the first negative action that they need to abandon.
Yes. Okay.
So now the four types of negativities that need to be abandoned and four types of positive action that need to be cultivated are presented, you know, in a mixed way. So the first negativity is to protect bodhicitta in future lives. One, you know, if one were to lie to one's gurus and like such beneficial individuals like one's parents, then there's a chance that one might lose bodhicitta in future lives. So now to counteract that, the first positive action is that, you know, we should learn to kuna karsum again.
La.
Kuna karsum kumsum again.
La.
Karsu tangbut again.
Karsu tangbut tereisha karsa.
So in order to prevent that, the first positive action would be that we should learn not to lie to anybody, like including any ordinary sentient beings, even just for fun, you know. So if we can do that, even just for the sake of fun or making somebody ha ha ha, you know, if we don't lie in the first place, then we will not, you know, indulge in the first kind of negativity.
Now
the second negativity, that could have a negative influence on cultivating bodhicitta in future lives, is if one were to, cause others to regret in the positive actions that they have done. Okay, if somebody has done a positive thing, and if we say something for that person to regret, oh my gosh, I shouldn't have done that, okay, and then that would be a negativity. And the example given here in the text is, say somebody has accumulated merit or positive action, okay, and he or she wants to dedicate a merit to accomplish Buddhahood for sentient beings. And if a bodhisattva says, you know what, come on, that is too high for you, you know. Why don't you dedicate it to, you know, find your nirvana or something, you know. And if the other person says, oh my gosh, I regret for having dedicated to the Buddhahood, well, I think he probably is right. I'm aiming too high, just go back, you know. Then that would be a negativity, see. So that person will regret, yeah. And or another example Geshe-la gives here is that if somebody is very generous and maybe have made a lot of offerings to the gurus or some monastery, and then you say something for that person to regret, like, you know, you shouldn't have given that much, you know. And then like, oops, you know, maybe I shouldn't have. Well, then, no, you give to the wrong monastery, you know, why don't you give to that one? I know it very well, right? You change the story. Got a problem? Okay. So all those are part of the second negativity. So making someone regret for something good he or she has done. Yeah.
Well, did that thing you would have... Karsa, Tinyam for Gaju Shiva Tirash, the wrong member shall be Simsin, Timmy Tibal Mingoper, Zobi Shanji Shubasta, in the Susu Pekum of Kansajina, Telekaji, Tijan Yango, Chito Kondoshi Bukaji, Tatavisa, the minute Divayamar, Timil Guyam, Shajarawa, Kaji Tavina, in Tijan Mango, Timil Guishan, in the Tilly that Karnaji.
Mm. So the second positive action, which is to counteract the second negativity you just talked about, is if a bodhisattva sees that an individual has the disposition and ability to work for complete enlightenment or Buddhahood, then bodhisattva should do his or her best to encourage this person to follow that path leading to enlightenment. And should not get advice that, you should first take care of yourself, go to nirvana, just forget about all these big things, you're thinking. So if we can, as a bodhisattva, really, what they want is, they want every sentient being to become a Buddha. Yeah? So the best advice they can give to everybody is that, they always encourage everybody to aim for the highest level, to go and strive for complete enlightenment. Yes, so if they do that, learn to do that, then they will be able to counteract the second negativity. So they won't be making others regret for something good they have done. Third negativity that could have an impact on one's bodhicitta and future lives is to badmouth about bodhisattvas. If we say something, the way we put it, unpleasant thing, the nice things about bodhisattvas, so then that would have a negative impact on the development of bodhicitta or continuing with bodhicitta in future lives. So an antidote to that, the third positive action would be that we should really learn to appreciate all sentient beings. And if we can, train our mind to see as if everybody is my teacher. Okay, everybody is just my teacher. So if we can cultivate that kind of a mindset and appreciation, then that would counteract And the fourth negativity that could impact our development and continuation of bodhicitta in future lives is to deceive and cheat others. The Tibetan word is yuju. If we kind of intentionally and knowingly, that's the understanding here, if we have some really good reason for not telling the truth, because that would be a different matter, because we still care about the other person. But not out of that, but knowingly we cheat and deceive others, so that would be that would have a negative impact on bodhicitta in future lives. In certain situations, maybe we cannot tell the truth, if you will. There could be a really good reason. And in the monastic Vinaya literature, one good example that's given is, say, if a hunter, asks you, or did you see whatever the animal I was chasing? Yeah, and you saw it, but you cannot tell the truth, because then the poor animal is going to get killed. Yeah, but at the same time, you cannot say, I didn't see it, because then you will be lying. So the one way to avoid that is, I'm kind of lost, I'm going that direction. So you just kind of change the topic, and that would be okay. But you are really, that is allowed in order to protect the life of somebody else, and you even did not say, I didn't see, right? So you're not lying, but you're just saying, I'm kind of lost. I think I need to go that direction. Don't you think so? Or something, just kind of,
That.
So, to prevent ourselves from deceiving and cheating others. The fourth positive action is that we should learn to, you know, and be honest with everybody. Okay? So if we are honest with everybody, then, you know, we, as we can see, it will prevent us from, you know, cheating others.
I think Isla must have laid out broad outlines some time ago, right, before I joined here. We talk about what are things needed to be done in order to receive, a set of vows. And once you have received the vows, how can you protect them? You know, what can you do those things? Yeah. And so as a part of that, there are different ways of protecting one's ethics of the vows. For example, one of the external conditions is by relying upon qualified gurus or the teachers, right, through their teaching, then we will be able to protect our ethics and the vows. Okay? This is where we talk about how the gurus have so much expertise, so through their teachings, so they guide us, and so we learn things, and therefore we can protect our ethics. But then we also, can talk about protecting ethics based upon our, what we call, internal favorable condition. So by that, what we mean is that from our own side, you know, if we cultivate mindfulness, okay, introspection, conscientiousness, yeah, so these things will help us to be aware of our thought and actions, and that therefore we remain vigilant and we don't break our vows, we don't transgress our vows, right? If you remember, you know, being mindful of your actions, being conscientious of your thought and actions, and introspect, you know, what we are thinking and what we are about to do. So through this method also, these are the internal conditions, right? Guru can't give you those present. You know, this is something we cultivate from our side, and we can protect our ethics. And the third way is, we said, by understanding the negative consequences of, breaking the vows. So what we just have talked about, in all these transgressions, is by understanding the negative consequences, so then we learn to protect our ethics or the vows. So these things are very important. You know, as ordinary sentient beings, you know, we always live with delusions, afflictive emotions. I don't think there's any moment we don't have delusions. We always have. Okay? So now, one of the things we can do is not to encourage the delusions, you know, not to befriend the delusions, not to support the delusions, not to sponsor the delusions. Okay? So that we can do. Yeah, otherwise, we always live with delusions. Every moment is a delusional moment for us. So, but not to, you know, kind of enjoy and delight and participate and in all these delusions. You know, so we shouldn't do that as a practitioners. So we said, okay, first step is, okay, we are interested to receive vows, so how should we go about that? Okay, there are certain things we can talk about. Then we said, okay, we have been lucky, we receive all kinds of vows. Now how can we protect our vows, right? So we talk about these different ways to protect the vows. Well, then we have to be honest to ourselves. We are ordinary beings, you know. We still translate our vows, we break our vows, right? Then what can we do, right, if we break our vows? This is where we talk about confession and restoring our vows. Okay?
No,
Okay, so let's talk a little bit about that. Okay, we have already received the vows, and we are doing, you know, what we can to protect our vows, but still we break the vows, you know, we transgress. So what do we do? Yeah. Okay, we have talked about certain, you know, categories of bodhisattva ethics, if you will. As I said the other day, that if we happen to incur root transgression, remember we talked about how, in order to commit a root transgression, whatever negativity, I mean, the vow we are breaking, it must be accompanied by, you know, one of the four fetters or the binding factors, remember? Yeah. So if that happens, then we have a root transgression. But the two exceptions are, we said, in the case of losing bodhicitta and generating wrong vows, we don't need any fetters. Okay. So, you know, without those four types of fetters or the binding factors we talked about, and if we generate wrong view or distorted view, in Tibetan called lokta, and if we give up our bodhicitta, you know, then that would be a root downfall for bodhisattvas. In such case, the only way to restore the vows is to receive the, you know, the whole set of vows again. Okay? And we can purify the negativity of having transgressed it, okay? but we cannot restore the vows, you know, just through purification. We need to receive the vows again, bodhisattva vows again. So that applies to the root transgressions or the root moral downfalls. Are you clear with that? Okay. And what Kesar was explaining is, in Buddhist literatures, you know, we have different schools of thought. So there's a whole discussion about, you know, can we purify any kind of negative karmas or negativities or not? Yeah. So there's one school called Vipassika school. I think they have been translated as the materialistic school or something. Yeah, and they say that, you know, yes, you know, most of the negativities can be purified, but not in any of the five heinous crimes. Okay, such as, you know, if I give you the example of killing one's mom or dad. Okay, that kind of negativity cannot be purified according to that Buddhist school of thought. But then the highest Buddhist school of thought, you know, what they say is no. Every kind of negative karma can be purified. All negativities are purifiable. Okay, period. Yeah. And so then they said, how is that possible? I think Geshe-la was trying to recall that it is somewhere in one of the great works of Lama Tsongkhapa, Jerembuche, where they really talk about, if you can sort of understand, reflect upon the emptiness nature of phenomena, right? The ultimate nature of phenomena, then you can see the possibility of, you know, purifying any kind of negativities. So through the understanding and through contemplating, meditating on emptiness, we will be able to understand and purify negativities. Now in the case of practitioners who have received tantric empowerments or initiations, abhishek, and who have done the standard retreats, right? So they can do self-initiation or self-empowerment. Right? So through self-empowerment, so one can restore the transgressed tantric vows, and one can also take in the bodhisattva vows, so one can restore the bodhisattva vows. Yeah, so those are some of the methods.
Oh dear, that's ene gor nyembo nga da ene ganzu namji diwa sha ge ene gar sa sunga ndom ba da ene do za samolo ba se ado se ten ba se ado tong yu ko ba si diwa sha ya thog den chung ro di ye gor sha dang ji yin yo da da de ri ji chi ji yo gor ni gar sa sha ya di mza di de da che da tong za dung me ba di ye gar che bu so na da di men ji tong sa ba chi chi ri ni ye ji nam la ene som yin ji xia ba dang se kan sa som yin ji xia ba ji da so zu dong a ka ri xiong yin na ti ma wo be xiao ju se be dong ba yin ge kan sa som yin ji le nga dong a ni ri xiong xiong si xi zi ta wo xi ru xi ni xi ju bu ji la som yin ji kan sa ji ni
na dong a
ni ri xiong xiong si wa
han na nong su ma so then what do we do with you know the secondary transgressions okay So in this case, if we transgress something, we can restore it. One of the method is, it says, that now this is like based upon external conditions, as we would say, that if you can find a group of three, you know, who have kept their bodhisattva vows intact, yeah, then if you confess in front of, you know, to that group, then that will help to restore the transgressed vow.
Oh, I see.
So we are kind of again talking about the transgression of different intensity. Okay, the full-fledged transgression, right, which is real bad news. Then there is what we call the middle-range transgression. Okay, and then there is the low intensity transgression, if you will. So in the case of the middle level intense transgression, as Geshe-la said, if you can find a group of three or more who have kept their bodhisattva vows intact, then you can confess in front of them, you can restore your transgressed vows. Okay. In the case of the low intensity transgression, okay, well, that's a mouthful to say, that if you find another person who has kept his or her bodhisattva vows intact, if you confess to him or her, then you can restore your transgressed vows. And then we also talked about some of the additional transgressions. Remember that if we have transgressed any of those vows, that is, if it's a low intensity transgression, if we could find someone who has kept his or her vows intact, we can confess in front of that person. If we couldn't, a real, breathing human being, so to speak, then we can just confess in the presence of the holy images, Buddhas and Bodhisattvas, right? We can do the confession and restore our vows. And so this is where, sometimes some of the other methods that people talk about is, how you can recite the 100 syllable Vajrasattva, mantra in order to restore the vows. Okay. Or sometimes we talk about, you can read some of those profound sutras, and that will also be helped to restore your vows. Okay. So there are many ways to, go about with that.
Yeah. 我的那他他念不他的七九公里下的他听到的可以有些呢 像心心，咱们就心一动下，接下都是我们的所以是过年下不下我啥？嗯，下不我心的那么一，念不都有参与过年下过心啥？我第一天看见，说是我张爷爷在，刚才现在你的下个月呢，看见刚才这，咱的念不都有的，可是啊，那么春节不到，念不过节不到，念不了都不到，等一到第一学期的名字，他干嘛是吧？我的他我这个参与过的是开发新的，等一中学个哪吒。
So some of the other methods to restore what we call low intensity transgressions include going for refuge in Buddha, Dhamma, and Sangha, generating the bodhicitta again, doing the Vajrasattva meditation and recitation, reciting some other kind of mantras, if you will. But whatever, purification or restoration method we follow, okay, central or essential to that is that we must make sure that what is known as the four opponent forces, four powerful antidotes, sometimes we translate it as tengi top shi, okay, four opponent forces must be present. If those four opponent forces are not present, doesn't matter, you're reciting mantra or you're doing whatever you're doing, it won't be effective purification practice. So now the question is, what are the four opponent forces, or the powers, if you will? Now I hope I remember this. The first, I think sometimes I get the whole order mixed, so I'm asking Geshe-la to go one by one. The first one is the opponent power or the force of what we call the power of reliance. Okay? Tenjito, okay, power of reliance. And the power of contrition or regret for having done wrong. Okay? Number sunjimito. And the power of resolution. You are not going to do them again. Okay, the power of resolution. And the power of applying real antidotes, right, to your negativities. Now that could be as, you know, simple practice as doing prostrations, okay, or doing some recitation, whatever it is. So those are called the four opponent forces. Okay, now, you know, let me try them again for your sake. There is the power of reliance, okay, and the power of regret, or the contrition for having done something wrong, and the power of applying antidotes to purify your negativities, and the power of resolution. You're not going to repeat them again. Yes? You have the four powers, right? Opponent forces. So those four opponent forces or the powers must be present in any kind of purification practice we do for the purification to be effective. Okay? So one thing I want to say is, remember we talked about, you know, different ways to purify our negativities and restore the vows. You know, one of the things we said, if it is you know, intermediate intensity transgression, then we find a group of three or more, you know, bodhisattvas or those who have kept the bodhisattva vows intact and confess them. Well, that's kind of hard, you know. Maybe that applies more to the monastic setting where, you know, you may be able to find a group of three or four or whatever, right? For ordinary lay people, you know, it's hard to go and find three of the group. Yeah. So then what is really more practical and applicable to the lay practitioners, bodhisattva practitioners, is the other methods we talked about, right? We can talk about the Vajrasattva meditation, recitation, going for refuge in Buddha, Dharma and Sangha, generating the bodhicitta, or, you know, reciting some other kinds of mantras, doing prostrations, and all those other methods are more applicable to the lay practitioners. Actually, Geshe-la Sesshin, a very interesting thought here. You know, some of these practices, for example, in the monastic universities, like Seradebu and Ganden, you know, because they are more focused on, primarily focused on the study of Sutrayana, okay? So they don't necessarily do some of these purification practices in assembly or in a group, like a tantric purification practice in a group. Okay? Whereas the two tantric colleges, you know, Upper Tantric College, Jude, Lower Tantric College, Jume, right, they do this in a group together, do the purification, you know, practices together. And also, Tashilumbu Monastery, one of the great monasteries of central Tibet, used to have a tantric college. So in that, they will do, again, together as a group, those tantric practices, get to do the purification and to restore their vows. So this kind of a congregation ritual ceremony practice, if I can put it that way, right? It is the chichu. So in the case of say the tantric colleges, you know, what happens is they come together, and then basically each monk is saying, you know what, you know, in the presence of this assembly of monks, you know, I'm really declaring that, you know, I have transgressed this vow or that vow, and so I'm confessing in front of you, and please help me to restore the vows. So there's a whole ritual to recite, and they do that three times, and so then they can restore the vows. Okay, so basically this is a group-oriented kind of a restoration and purification practice. So anyway, Kishala said, that would just give you a sense of, you know, this group-oriented practice. Anyway, we don't do it here, so that's not applicable. We're not going to go to every detail, right? We are not doing it together. We don't do it here. So give you a sense of that. Now the next outline is talking about the benefits of receiving bodhisattva vows and keeping them, you know, intact. Yeah. And the first benefit, you know, is that when we, you know, keep our vows intact, ethics, you know, intact, then Buddhas are very delighted and happy with us. They regard us as their children. Okay, so that is a benefit. You know, Buddhas are very delighted. They're very proud of us, you know, as children of the Buddha family.
Yes.
And another benefit that's talked about is when we keep our bodhisattva ethics or the vows intact, then at the time of death, you know, we don't really need to fear, you know, death and dying or falling into bad states of rebirth. Yeah, as a matter of fact, you know, we have accumulated so much merit that, you know, it will enable us to be able to meet the Dharma and qualified teachers in the future, meet bodhisattvas, meet Buddhas, you know, in our future lives. As great Bodhisattva Shantideva talks about in his Guide to Bodhisattva's Way of Life, or Bodhisattva Char Avatar, as Geshe-la quoted the stanza from his memory, you know, talking about the benefits of bodhicitta, there's no other virtue that can outdo, you know, the power of bodhicitta. If we have bodhicitta, right, it is such a powerful state of mind that it can do a lot of purification on its own. Yeah. And so no other virtue is comparable to the virtue of a bodhicitta. And a metaphor we use, it's like a panacea for all kinds of negativities. You know, it's just like if there is a medicine that can cure like 100 different kinds of disease, well, that would be something, isn't it? So bodhicitta is that. You know, it can really address so many problematic issues and purify negativities. So therefore, it is a real panacea, a spiritual one.
No.
And also by keeping our Bodhisattva ethics and vows intact, you know, we will have much more likelihood to meet with, gurus or the teachers and other Bodhisattvas who are of like-minded, okay, who subscribe to the same philosophy and same way of doing things. Okay, now that's very important. In a monastic setting, there's so much emphasis put on how all the monks, you know, they should try their best to be like-minded. You know, they share the same perspective or the outlook on life and the goals, what they're working for, and they have to behave the same, you know, according to the rules and the disciplines. Okay, that's very important. So if there's a mismatch in that, you know, then there's some problem. As Geshe-la was giving an example, even in the case of a teacher and a student, you know, we cannot say that a teacher and student will absolutely share the same, you know, mindset and the same behavior. They don't. But if they do, there's some kind of special connection, isn't it? Right? That teacher and student have the same outlook on life, same philosophy, same goal, same behavior, and then that seems to have a special connection. But whereas, if that kind of connection is not there, but, you know, things don't seem to work in the same way. And also, keeping Bodhisattva ethics of the vows intact enable us to be able to fulfill or accomplish the perfection of morality or ethics. Right, compared to other types of vows, if you are really good in keeping the Bodhisattva vows intact, then, you know, we could make an argument that you won't have difficulty observing or preserving other kinds of vows. Okay, so therefore, you have that edge, you know, so to speak, to be able to fulfill the perfection of ethics or Shila Paramita.
Yes. 那个也培养他也不送金子，这里他一定就不是啊，对吧？看见看咱们这些话了，再得了呀，你把心给钱，那你叫什么没力了，那样过别就一定就不是了呀，这个少些啊，搞不清楚的。然后别少些帮这个，然后过没力了，这少些怎么不行的？一定就不用啊，就说我这个再得这种要不送，可能叫什么了，这种要不送东西，我这个下个就是。
And another benefit is, if in this life, I mean, you become good at keeping the Bodhisattva vows, you know, intact, then in your future lives, you know, you will also be able to do the same thing. Because, you know, one of the things we talk about, cause and effect, or karma and law, is there's something called result corresponding to the previous causes. Okay? And the examples Geshe-la has given is that, say, in this life, you are really, you know, very good at saving lives, you know, and you don't want to kill anything, something like that. So in your next life, if you're reborn as a human being, from a very young age, you know, you just love to save lives. You know, you don't have the inclination to kill anything. Okay? But whereas in this life, if we are so habituated and used to killing something, even if for some good karma, we are born as a human being in the next life, from a very young age, we just love to kill. And you know, it's just like, okay, that's the natural thing to do. There, you know. So, I mean, they're bad. See, that's the result corresponding to previous causes. When we talk about you know, karmic actions and their consequences and the results, you know, we talk about different types of categories. One is called ripening result of karma, right? Both good and bad karma. Now that can only happen once. A karma can only bring its ripening result once. Okay, so whether good or bad. But in the case of results corresponding to the causes, there could, you know, how to say, impact our many rebirths in the future, you know. And so as we sometimes talk about in the case of results corresponding to the causes, this would call result corresponding to the past action and result corresponding to the past experience. Okay? Now using this example, say someone who is so habituated to killing, okay, others, so when he or she is reborn in the next life, a result corresponding to the past action would be he loves to kill, okay, from the young age. Yeah, habituated action. Result corresponding to the past experience would be because he has cut short the lifespan of many sentient beings, so in his future life, his life will be very short. Okay? Not, so now the thing to remember here is, Kishala says that this kind of results corresponding to the causes, this can not only happen once, it could just, you know, replay over and again in many lifetimes. So therefore it becomes a very serious matter. Okay? In the case of the ripening result, good or bad, it only comes once, right? Then you are done with it. But in the case of this set of results, they can repeat themselves over many lifetimes, so it gets very serious. Okay? If you love killing, you might end up loving killing over many lifetimes. So now you can see how bad that is. So ultimately, you know, what's the point of developing bodhicitta, giving bodhisattva's ethics is, you know, that we want to become Buddha. Yeah? Of course, there is no other greater cause than bodhicitta, you know, that will help us to become a real Buddha. Right? So by keeping the bodhicitta and the bodhicitta, bodhisattva ethics intact, you know, we are able to gain, accomplish the perfection of morality or the ethics and eventually become a Buddha. So that's our final goal.
Okay.
So based upon this kind of a short, you know, description of bodhisattva, you know, vows that I have tried my best to explain, you know, the root transgressions and the secondary transgressions and additional secondary transgressions, all of that thing, you know. So I hope I have made some sense here, and so I would just only like to just ask all of ourselves, you know, to do our best to use the information and, you know, keep our vows intact. So with that, we come to the conclusion of this teaching on bodhisattva vows. Okay, and so next Sunday would be, we will just begin the shamatha, you know, section or the calm abiding section of the Great Lamrim text. Okay, as we said, we will alternate between, right, two different sections, the beginning and the end. So we will begin the shamatha teaching next Sunday. But now Geshe-la would like to give you the chance to ask questions.
Thank you. Thank you, Geshe-la. As I understand it, there's two types of karma, the ripening result, which only happens once, and then the result resembling the action, which is kind of the habituation of doing an action. Mm-hmm. Does the purification practices purify only the ripening result?
Okay.
Or does it also purify the result resembling the action?
Very good. All right. Why do I speak English to Geshe-la? Now, when we purify our negativities, we are able to purify all, you know, all of that. But here's the thing: what Geshe says, when we create a one negative karma, right? I'm using negative karma as an example here, okay? It works same for the positive one. That's in my footnote. That we only create one action, right? We are not going to do the same thing three times, right? We just only do one negativity. That negativity brings its own ripening result, negative one. It brings results corresponding to the causes, two types of those we just talked about. And then it will also bring the environmental result, okay? But when we purify that one karma, it purifies, it prevents us from experiencing all of those, you know, possible outcomes. Okay, so in other words, to answer your question, purification practice can take care of the negativity completely. Yeah, yeah. I think Bob wants, yeah.
Thank you, Geshe-la. I was always under the impression that that the karma you create, it multiplies. So that if you don't purify it, the results multiply. You said today that the results only occur once. That's the impression I have. So if if the results multiply, can you explain how it only occurs once when it supposedly multiplies if you don't purify?
Kinshala, what he wants to explain is, you know, you use the word multiplication of a karma, right? in the Tibetan term, the option that's used is le pelcha, means increasing nature of the karma, okay? So what that usually, you know, we're talking about is that if we create an insignificant positive or negative karma, which from our point was very insignificant, but if we don't do anything with it, you know, it could produce a tremendous result, okay? And that is due to increasing what we call that nature of the karma. The example Geshe-la has given, he thought this is okay to talk about, because in South India, where they live in the monastery, they have to cultivate field, they used to, okay? So they grow corns, they call it maize, okay? So if you put one seed down, right, when it brings it can, you know, that one seed, it can bring so many corns, okay? So like that, if we do one karma, small one, with the passage of time, it can produce great result, okay? It's not the sense of multiplying, like, you know, say, if we do one karma now, right, it will become two, two become four, four become eight, eight become 16, not that, okay? Not talking about that. Now, what he was explaining today about with regard to any karma, we could only experience its ripening result once, good or bad. Okay, so that's a different. This is a different matter. We're not talking about the intensity of that karma. We're just simply saying that any karma we create, and we could only experience its ripening result, whatever it is, only once. But that's not the case with the results corresponding to the causes, because they could carry over. We could experience it in over many lifetimes. Does that somehow clarify something, Bob? Not really? Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
Thank you, Geshe-la. T. Tenzin Law mentioned that you can cultivate bodhicitta three times in the morning and three times at night. Please excuse my ignorance. Could you be a little bit more specific about that, please? Okay.
What that really means is, generating, as I put it, generating bodhicitta three times a day, three times a night, But it could be just simply reflecting upon it. Yeah. So during the daytime, the sense is that we have a lot of time to remember it. If we can just bring bodhicitta to our mind three times during the daytime, so that would be fine. But now at night is the question, right? He said now before we fall asleep at bed, we could be lying down in our bed, that's fine. But if we kind of reflect on it a couple of times, that will be fine. So that would become 3-3, yeah. Because probably you are thinking about like getting up in the middle of the night or something, And so that would be inconvenient, but it doesn't have to be that. So before we fall asleep, just sleeping and you remember it, a couple of times, so that would be fine.
Thank you, Geshe-la.
Okay, who needs the mic? Anybody? Okay, maybe we can stop there today.
Yes.
Hello.
Oh, pure. fearless Savior and Supreme Teacher, Suddhodana Son, O the 17 masters and adepts, Nagarjuna and Asanga, and so on, O Dipankara, as well as Sovereign Father Tsongkhapa, gloriously appear here today to grant auspiciousness. On the great path leading to the heart of enlightenment, you've traversed by means of the perfect threefold discipline, and have enhanced ever higher the realizations of the enlightened qualities. O glorious Guru, we offer our supplications at your feet. They return gloriously to propagate the teaching of love song, by tying well the sash of monastic disciplinary precepts, and generating the altruistic intention to free all beings. Engage in the tantric yogas of the two stages. Think of the unbearable pain of the sentient beings who are enveloped in the forces of five degenerations, and open wide the lotus grove of the Buddha's teaching. May your reincarnation appear soon as a source of merit for us all.
O infinite Buddhas and Bodhisattvas, you are the embodiment of uncontaminated and immutable greatness. Kindly pour on us now your blessings. Rains of nectar from the great clouds of your pervasive, pure, and bright wisdom and compassion to eliminate our distress. We pray to you, an incomparable great hero, who has perfectly realized within his mind the threefold ethics, a pure essence of the extensive system of Tathagata's teaching. He who has raised a parasol of Dharma in hundreds of directions. Your body is a sun of all wonderful qualities, but all of a sudden it set into solitary peace. You have committed before infinite Buddhas to work for Dharma and sentient beings. You could not have given up your commitment. However, your presence depends on the fortunes of disciples, for the power of dependent arising is inconceivable. Please reincarnate soon as a new light of Dharma, out of your compassion that never abandons us. Please return soon as a supreme spiritual guide, a treasure house of the immense teaching of Buddha, a voice that eloquently elucidates the teaching that suits individuals' dispositions and capacities. Please return soon as a great Dharma king, who will be known in all directions for smashing into pieces a mountain of misguided teachings and views through the power of your thunderbolt lightning of the three reasonings. Please return soon, just like your previous self, an expert in the five major sciences of Buddhism, whose eloquent words and articulation of the teaching captivate the hearts of all the scholars and activate deep appreciation and pure enthusiastic minds. Please return soon as a spiritual guide, endowed with complete knowledge, kindness, and dedication in regard to the perfect view, meditation, and conduct, one who facilitates the opening of the blossom lotus, that is the golden teaching of Tsongkhapa. By the power of the three infallible jewels, by the power of dependent arising of the by the tree of
Nam Mô Vô Song Cứu Độ Chí Tôn Bổn Sư Tịnh Phạn Thái Tử. Nam Mô 17 Cao Tổ Chư Hiền Thánh Tăng Long Thọ Vô Trước. Nam Mô Dipakara Cùng Tôn Cơ Pha Tôn Vương Tử Phụ. Quang Lâm Đương Chốn Hiện Tại Hiện Tiền Ban Truyền Phước Nhũ. Thênh thang đạo lộ trực chỉ chân tâm kiến tánh đẳng giác. Ngài đã siêu việt do nghiêm túc giữ ba tạng giới luật, rồi lại phát huy bay bổng tuyệt vời bồ đề hạnh chứng. Tôn sư Quang Viên Tứ Chúng thỉnh cầu gót sen lễ lại, xin mau trở lại quang huy truyền bá giáo pháp Lô Sang, bằng sự thắt chặt đai giới nghiêm minh thiền môn tự viện, rồi lại khởi tâm từ bi đại nguyện giải thoát chúng sanh, tinh chuyên hành trì du già mật định nhị phần chứng đắc. Xin luôn thương tưởng thống khổ bất kham ba cõi hữu tình, thường bị bao phủ trao đảo khôn nguôi mãnh lực ngũ trược, đưa tay rộng mở bát ngát vườn sen giáo lý Phật Đà, xin mau tái sanh nhanh chóng hiện hành ban nguồn phước chúng. Nam mô vô biên chư Phật chư Bồ Tát, các ngài thể hiện bát ngát báu thân của chân đại lạc bất biến trong ngần, xin trải từ tâm ân cần phù hộ, mưa thánh thủy từ mây đại độ, đủ hệ bi tịnh phổ rạng người, tận diệt thánh khổ tức thời, niệm danh ngài bậc đại hùng vô sánh, đã hoàn toàn chứng pháp tánh nơi tâm, ba tạng giới luật cốt tủy uyên thâm của đại thừa Như Lai truyền giáo, Ngài nâng cao lộng vòng pháp bảo, chăm hướng vươn lan tỏa muôn phương, báu thân Ngài chói nhòa phẩm hạnh, sao bỗng nhiên nhập cảnh bích chi. Ngài từng trước Phật thệ nghi, hứa luôn hoằng pháp lòng vì độ sanh, nay Ngài hẳn không đành bỏ nguyện, tùy phước đệ tử mà Ngài hiện thế. Lý nhân duyên chẳng thể nghĩ bàn, xin mau hóa sanh thành ánh đạo vàng, từ bi mãi chẳng bỏ đàn bơ vơ, xin mau trở lại là đại đạo sư, như kho tàng chứa kinh thư vô lượng. Lời tuyên giảng soi đường pháp bảo, khế căn cơ thiện xảo độ sanh, xin mau trở lại là đại pháp vương, lừng danh kim cổ mười phương tán đồng, phá tan núi mỹ pháp lồng tà kín, tam đoạn luật xét nghiến sấm vang, xin mau trở lại như thân đời trước, đắc ngũ minh kiến thức uyên thâm, viện tài vô ngại lý giải pháp âm, học giả khẩu phục hằng tâm, thiện giả cảm nhận hồng ân nước lòng, xin mau trở lại là bậc đạo sư, thiên thư thông thái mẫn từ tận tâm, chánh kiến định mạng chuyên cần, ươm sen hé nhị hương lên pháp đàn, của tông khách ba ý ngọc lời vàng, do thần lực tam bảo ly nướng, do thần lực duyên khởi tương ưng, với tánh không bất nhị bất trùng, do tâm lực trí thành cùng kính ngưỡng, xin cho sở nguyện chúng đệ tử được tức thời viên mãn.
Yes, now it is. Okay. I'm sorry. This is an announcement on behalf of Yen, who is being responsible for helping people getting housing for the Kala Chakra initiation in Washington, D.C. in July. There has been emails that have been sent to people who have requested that we help coordinate housing for them in Washington, D.C., and it's possible that some of those emails have been spammed or not received by those who are requesting housing. So our concern is that those who have requested housing, they need to contact Tupten Dargye Ling, Gandhacharya Tupten Dargye Ling, Yen, and the people that are coordinating that will reply to them with their payments and reservations for those rooms, because our contract with George Washington University is coming up really quick, and those payments need to be received for us to confirm the contract. So please, if you haven't received a communication about that yet, let this warning be a notice for you. Thank you.